Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at Your Financial Choices. You can listen online each and every week at WDIY.org and on the WDIY app. Funny story, I'm out of breath because I was chatting and didn't realize we were going on air. So you now know this is a live show this evening. But thanks to Bob who came in and grabbed me. So, and thank you to Norm for being here as well. Today is February 4th, 2026. The markets were mixed today with the Dow closing up at 49,501, the NASDAQ down at 22,904, and the S&P down at 6,882. Our topic tonight is getting ready for tax preparation. I'm going to, tell you what that means and how it can help you. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. As I mentioned, Bob is here and Cindy is here in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. And you can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking live, you can give your question to Cindy, and they'll bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So in getting ready for the show tonight, I did kind of borrow some information from our tax department at Valley National because I thought, why recreate the wheel? Because these are some tax preparation tips we give in our weekly commentary. It's called the Weekly Commentary, and it's Tax Corner, your pre-filing checklist, simple steps to streamline your 2025 filing. And why do we go over this? We go over this for a number of reasons, not only to help our clients get ready, but also to make that process a little bit more efficient. Typically, if you're working with a tax preparer, you may be paying for your tax preparation based on forms that they're filling out, or it may be based on time. So if at least you can save time in the tax preparation, then hopefully that will then save fees, preparation fees. And in fact, you may be able to even save some forms if your accountant thinks you're going to have a Schedule A and itemize, and maybe this year you're not going to. If you do some of that pre-work, then they may not have to go through the exercise of, considering that form for you. So what are we doing? We're at, February 4th, I think, and we have tax season is open, apparently. Some people are still waiting for forms. I know many of our clients have not received many of their tax forms yet. Some of you might have received your W-2. You may still be waiting for Social Security statements. I think those came out. Maybe brokerage statements. Just a note about bank interest. If it's less than $10, they don't have to file a 1099. You may or may not be waiting for forms. If you're not getting one, I would say in the next week or so, brokerage 1099s usually do get a little bit of an extension now. They used to always have to, file them by January 31st, and then they could do a corrected one. And sometimes we would have corrected 1099s like once and then twice. So the IRS kind of gave permission to certain of those investment companies to have a little bit more time rather than correcting and correcting. Give them a little bit more time to reconcile their books, to properly report the capital gain distributions, for example. Sometimes things have to get reclassified. That's why it takes a little longer for brokerage statements, for example. Not always, but sometimes. So they do have a little bit more time. But generally, the tax forms are supposed to be out for by January 31st. That's for your typical 1099 INT, 1099 DIV, W-2s, 1099 Rs, etc. Then there are other certain forms that you may receive depending on what other kind of income you get. For example, if you're a partner in a partnership, that would be March 15th, S-Corp, S-Corp shareholders. Estates and trusts have until April 15th to file. Some estates are fiscal year filers, and trust can make an election to file as a fiscal year if it's applicable and follows the rules kind of like of estate accounting. So you may have a K-1 from an estate or trust that might also come a little bit later. If you are a beneficiary of an estate or trust, you would just reach out either to the trustee or the executor or the law firm that's handling it and say, when can we anticipate this K-1? Because I know for a fact some of our clients don't get their K-1s until later, because even partnerships and S-Corps can file extensions. And sometimes those K-1s come out after April 15th. So there's certain clients that we just know we're going to file an extension. And if you know that you're one of those people, you can just go ahead and tell your accountant, hey, I'm going to have that form. I'm not going to get it on time. Let's just file the extension now. And then, you know, that helps the accounting firm get it done early before they get super busy and you're not waiting to do it on April 15th. And what I mean by not waiting to do it until April 15th, when I was just talking about an extension, Lori, it's not due April 15th if I do an extension. The extension's due by April 15th, but you could do the extension early. But if you owe, the extension is not an extension of time to pay. It's an extension of time to file. And also, if you think, oh, I'm never going to get my stuff together. I don't know when I'm going to do it. I'm a procrastinator. I'm never going to, you know, get this done in time. It's always better to file the extension to avoid a late filing penalty. Because if you don't file the extension and you don't file your tax return on time and you owe, there would be a late filing penalty. So you could end up with a late filing penalty, a late payment penalty, interest, etc. So tax forms may or may not be here timely, but you want to watch. So let's go back to my little tax corner pre-filing checklist, simple steps to streamline your 2025 filing. If you've not started, this is a good time to begin gathering and organizing your tax documents. So before you send your materials to your tax professional, there's a few simple steps that can help ensure your information is complete, secure, and easy to process, and some small efforts can save time and reduce errors and keep your tax filing on track. So the first thing that we mentioned in the tax corner was open every envelope. You may be surprised how often people drop off documents that are still in the envelope. And there are people who still deliver their tax forms to their accountant in paper. Many accounting firms are now going all electronic, meaning they want electronic delivery of your tax information, perhaps using a secure client portal. And they are encouraging you to either scan those documents and upload them into this portal, or click and drag PDF documents that you may have downloaded from the different providers. You know, a lot of people get their W-2s online now. You get your brokerage statements online, your tax documents online. If that's the case and you have them as PDF, electronic documents, and your accountant or preparer has a portal, you may be able to just upload those documents or, as I said, drag and drop. So you want to, the electronic way is very efficient, I would say. You just want to make sure it's also secure and that it's a secure portal and that whoever you're working with has taken the measures to make sure that it's secure. We are at our first break, and when we come back, I'll continue our discussion about getting ready for tax season. And if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit WDIY.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. I did forget to mention the markets today, I think, or did I? Did I mention the markets? I think I did, actually. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So let's go back to getting ready. So we have the electronic document delivery as an option. And then if you are still doing paper, or maybe you do some electronic and some paper, it really helps to open the envelopes. Why should you pay your accountant time to open the envelopes? Because when they open them, sometimes it's not even tax documents. It might just be, you know, privacy policies or just literature. So when you open the envelopes, you're ensuring what is in that envelope is a tax document, and it gives you an opportunity to review it to make sure it is applicable and that it's correct and it looks right, etc. You also want to watch if you have kids at home, for example, and you're getting tax documents, you need to differentiate between tax documents that belong to you and tax documents that belong to your children. There have been times where we have, you know, 1099 bank interest that comes through and it's actually the child's, not the parents. And, you know, we typically will try to watch for Social Security numbers and names, but, you know, occasionally that gets, you know, passed through. And your child may or may not have to file a tax return. And so we don't want to report it on your return if it's not yours. And if it's less than an amount that would require a child to file a return, we don't want to over-report income either. So open those envelopes. Look for, you know, missing items. Look for, you know, additional, not necessary papers that are in there. So bank statements, investment firms, mortgage lenders, employers, don't assume you know the contents. Organize without using staples. Staples jam scanners. So those people who are doing electronic delivery, we don't need to worry about staples or paper clips or anything like that. But if you are delivering paper to your tax preparer, it really helps to remove the staples. Again, sometimes what's attached on those stapled copies is not, you know, information that anyone needs. And staples jam scanners. And most accounting firms are having to scan these documents because they will keep it on file as part of their records and support for the tax return. So you want to remove those staples. And then also even be careful for paper clips, frankly, as well. But you can use paper clips. That's more favorable than staples. It's easier to slip off a paper clip than it is to take staples out. And staples sometimes rip the paper. And then when you try to scan it and you put it through the scanner, it gets jammed up that way too. So you can use paper clips or binder clips to group physical documents. You can organize the papers by category, like income or deductions or charitable contributions, and you can label each section. Sometimes what happens too, I don't know if we talk in here about organizers. Quite often when you're working with a tax preparer, they may provide to you a tax organizer that, you know, would be based on what you had in the prior year. Typically what we do now is we just kind of give our clients like a document checklist, which shows the documents that they had in the prior year. You want to make sure that you have those same documents, or if you don't have them anymore, you could put a line through it to tell the tax preparer, hey, you don't need to call me to ask where is my ABC company brokerage account because I don't have that anymore. I closed it out last year. So I put a line through it so they know that they don't need to, you know, call and pester me for it. Or if you have a new document now, you cross off the one that you got rid of and now you put new XYZ company and, you know, make sure you include that in the records. So using the organizer, if they have one, can be helpful. Here's where it used to be a problem. Now we just do it as a list. When we used to do the organizers where we would give them the whole package, a lot of the tax softwares will print out these whole organizers. Clients were rewriting all of the tax information off the tax forms when they were doing it like on paper and sometimes even electronically. They were typing in the numbers. That doesn't necessarily help. Because if we have a tax document, I don't need those numbers written out because now I have to look two places. I have to look at the tax document and I have to look at what you wrote. And they may not always be consistent. They may not match. And then it necessitates more questions. So you want to watch for those organizers where you think you have to put everything in. Sometimes you don't. Use it as a guide. I remember thinking back in the day when other firms were using organizers and we weren't, I thought, why are those accounting firms giving those organizers to clients when, you know, they have to do all the work? The clients have to do all the work. I didn't think that was right or fair. Well, if you just use it as a guide, I think it's a great guide. If you don't have an organizer and you haven't used one or your tax preparer does not give you one, you pull out your last year's tax return. Pull out last year's tax return, look at page one, look at page two, flip the pages, look at your Schedule B where you might have interest and dividends, look and see what was reported. Oh, I have Coca-Cola dividends. I sold that last year. I'm going to cross that off. I'm not going to expect that 1099 div for that stock anymore. So you want to use that as a guide. Now, I will mention that some things are changing for 2025 because you may be able to itemize where in past years you didn't. So I'll go over that a little bit later in the show. So right now we're still just organizing. So you're either doing it electronic or paper. You're being careful about opening envelopes. You're being careful about, you know, how those documents are bound. And even electronically, let me mention, when you upload scan documents, sometimes what people will do is they'll try to be efficient for us and they'll think that's helpful. And the 1099, let's say consolidated dividend statement from the broker, because a consolidated one might include interest, dividends, and sales versus a separate 1099 INT, a separate 1099 div, a separate 1099B. They consolidate it, put it all on one 1099. Those are great. And sometimes clients will think they're helping us. And let's say it's page 1 through 20. And they'll go through and pick out the pages that might not have tax information on it. Or so they think, oh, there's no, you know, they might just give us page 1 and 2 where they see the interest and dividends. They might not realize on page 16 there's additional information that we need. So I suggest if you have brokerage statements that are, you know, as long as that, you do want to give your accountant the entire 1099 consolidated, because there is often extra information on those 1099s that we use. For example, if you have a treasury bill or a treasury note or something that sells midterm, it could be reported as a sale, and we have to make special calculations to report it's not a gain or a loss. It's like interest income or interest paid, you know, if you're buying and selling different types of treasuries. And we need that detailed information further in the 1099. All right. Watch for those later corrective forms, as I mentioned. They do try to avoid doing corrected 1099s for the most part by delaying the filing of them. But sometimes we still do have some corrections. Some corrections still do come through. So you just kind of have to watch for that. And what we typically tell people when someone has like a corrected 1099 that might come through like late February or March, usually those are the clients who do usually have more complicated tax situations, and they may be waiting anyway to file. So just be aware, those corrected forms might come through, and they may or may not require, if you've already filed, they may or may not require a change. If the change is immaterial to the IRS. Like if they say, oh, there was $10 more of dividends, it may be immaterial and you wouldn't have to do a correction, but it's still good to let your accountant know. Folks, we are talking about getting ready for tax season, giving you some tips to help make the process a little bit more efficient for you. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. And you can also listen on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. We are talking about getting ready for tax season for you to help you with being efficient and hopefully, if not just for yourself, if you're self-prepared, but also for if you have preparers to help save some fees, perhaps on time, making it nice and clean for your tax preparer. So some other tips include key supporting documents, and this may not be as obvious, but to ensure accuracy and avoid IRS inquiries, provide your preparer with year-end pay stubs. Now, why would that be important? Remember I said there's some new, tax implications this year that we have to pay attention to for 2025? And I say pay stub? Well, I normally don't give my pay stub to my tax preparer. Well, what we're looking at for that may or may not apply to you. It depends on if you may be someone who would benefit from claiming a deduction under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act with qualified overtime or gig economy income. And so overtime and tips. And so that might be important to have the pay stub because there have been some respite to employers for their reporting requirements because it kind of happened so fast in the beginning of the year. The tax laws change didn't come till later in the year, so employers may not have, had the proper accounting systems in place to account for all of this. But taxpayers who have certain overtime and certain tip income may be able to exclude that income, and it may or may not be reported properly on your W-2, which is why it's important to look at the pay stub. Now, I do want to remind people, and I think I talked about this on a prior show, and I'm actually going to talk about understanding your tax return next week as well, that the overtime is not the whole overtime. It's only the incremental amount. So if you make $10 an hour and you got paid $15 an hour for one extra hour of overtime, it's not the $15 that's excluded. It's only the $5. It's only the amount over the regular income. And I got to tell you, when some of this tax law comes at you, and it comes at you so fast, and there's so many details, and you read things online, and it's just kind of, or you hear, even the politicians say, oh yeah, overtime is excluded. You can make a lot of assumptions about that. And in your mind, you can think, oh my gosh, my overtime's excluded. And if I got paid, an extra $1,000 of overtime, that's so exciting, or I'll call it $1,200, it's easier for me to talk about. $1,200 of overtime, you might think the $1,200 is excluded, and it's not. It would only be $400 of that is excluded for tax purposes. And it's just federal tax. It's not for your Medicare or Social Security tax. And tip income, you might get excited about that. Well, there's only certain occupations that they've already, made a list for where that tip income will qualify. And there's all kinds of caveats for that as well. So knowing some of the details of that extra income you have by looking at year-end pay stubs, or if you somehow kept track of your tip income or your employer kept it, in a different ledger, you want to make sure you have access to that. All right, key supporting documents. What else would be really important for your tax preparer to know? Proof of estimated tax payments. So for those people who don't cover their taxes through withholdings, meaning federal withholdings from wages or your IRA distribution or your Social Security, your 1099-R, IRA distribution, if you're not covering your taxes through withholdings, we are a pay-as-you-go system. And the pay-as-you-go, if you don't have the opportunity to do withholdings, you would have estimated tax payments. And you would want a record of what those estimated tax payments are. And you can do that through IRS direct pay confirmations or bank statements or canceled checks. And if I have time, as I go through later in the show, I'm going to talk to you about accessing some of this information on the IRS's website if you set up an account there. So hopefully I'll have time to talk about that. And if not, I'll talk about it next week, that you can kind of see some of this information. But the best proof is either a canceled check or if you put it on a credit card, which typically people don't. Usually we're seeing it come out of the bank accounts for estimated tax payments. Some people write those check numbers on their little vouchers and make a photocopy of them. Sometimes the tax preparers give them like a letter saying, here, what your estimates are. I know we do for clients, and they write the check number and the date that they paid the estimate. You do usually want to make sure those checks cleared too, because on occasion, someone will think they paid and they never checked their bank statement and didn't see that, you know, the IRS never cashed the third quarter check and it'll look like you underpaid. So watch out for things like that too. Make sure those checks are canceled. If you have some other supporting documents for things like a business, if you have a Schedule C business, or if you have a rental property, or if you itemize deductions, or in the past you didn't itemize deductions because the standard deduction was so high, and now they've kind of lifted this, what they call the SALT deduction, the state and local tax deduction, which includes real estate taxes, you might be able to itemize this year. I'm still finding it with a lot of clients, it's still hard to get over that standard deduction. That standard deduction is still so high. I mean, if you don't have mortgage interest and you just have real estate taxes and you give modestly to charity, you're still not going to probably get over that standard deduction. So when we talk about keeping receipts or logs of, you know, information for tax deductions, you might even want to give a call to your accountant and say, does this make sense? Or you would know, you know, if the standard deduction is, you know, $30,000+ for married filing joint or $15,750 for single, and maybe you don't own a home, so you have no mortgage interest, you have no real estate taxes, and you give $1,000 to charity, well, your standard deduction of $15,750 in that circumstance is going to be way more than your ability to itemize. So you really wouldn't need to substantiate any of those extra, you know, expenses or deductions. I will add, though, as my little asterisk, because some people think that they're, you know, they heard about this deduction for charity if you don't itemize. That starts in 2026. It did not start in 2025. And that's going to be $1,000 for single and $2,000 for married filing joint. Personally, I've told clients, my clients who are asking about it mostly are the people who are in their 70s and are eligible to do qualified charitable distributions. And if they have IRAs and they're charitably inclined, I tell them, do it out of your IRA. That's where I'd prefer to have it. Because if I take, you know, if you're single and it's a $1,000 deduction, it comes off after your income. Whereas if I do it out of the IRA, it's lowering your total income. And that may help in other ways, may or may not, but you know, usually it's better to do it out of the IRAs because that would be taxable to you anyway, too. So cancel checks for your estimated tax payments, summarize receipts or logs for deductions. You might have charitable donations. Maybe you're a big donor. You do want to have the receipts, whether it's, you know, out of your bank account or out of your brokerage account or out of your IRA. You still want to have receipts and keep track of that and substantiate business expenses, etc. We're at the halfway point. We're going to continue our discussion about getting ready for tax season. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy. Again, 610-758-8810. Talking about getting ready for tax prep, the final note on the key supporting documents. When we talk about, you know, tax documents that you're getting, the 1099s, the INT, DIV, B, consolidated, 1099R, 1099 miscellaneous, 1099 NEC, non-employee compensation, W-2, Social Security, those are the typical tax documents we're looking at. If you have a business, there will be very important information we need as tax preparers that is not going to be reported on a tax document, and that would be your expenses. So we generally provide our clients with an Excel spreadsheet where they can enter the information, the date, the amount, the check number, the category of expense that it was, and it can kind of, you know, add it up automatically for them if they don't have an accounting software. Many, because there are a lot of small businesses that may not, you know, if you're doing consulting, you may not need, you know, something fancy. Some people use Quicken or QuickBooks. So whatever it is you might do to support your expenses for your business and how you track them, that would be important. We are no longer doing like shoebox kind of looking at the receipts. You as the taxpayer are responsible for making sure that you have the support and backup for those deductions that you're taking, and we are relying on you for that. If you have questions about those deductions, you certainly ask your tax preparer, because, you know, it may or may not be important, or and you want to make sure you keep, you know, all your receipts. But the tax preparer doesn't necessarily need your shoebox full of receipts, okay? Because you're tracking it, hopefully, in a system where you have a, you know, a checkbook linked to your bank account that is specifically for your business. And if you were ever audited, that's what the IRS is going to ask for. They're going to ask for, you know, copies of your bank statements and, you know, go through and then ask for receipts for, you know, oh, that $2,000 carpet or that $5,000 computer. Let's see the receipt for that. That's how they might do an audit. So you do want to substantiate those claims that you're making. Now, let's go back for a moment to organizing that all this information. So we've now collected the envelopes and opened them and opened up the packages, separated out the privacy policies or the mailing label, and we just have intact the tax documents. If it's paper, you're going to deliver those. If you're going to deliver it electronically, you're going to scan it. If you're scanning, the other thing, folks, you want to make sure if it's double-sided that you're scanning double-sided. I also cannot tell you how many times wonderful people are scanning their documents to provide them electronically, and they don't realize when they're putting it through the scanner that it's double-sided and you have to hit a different button for double-sided. And so instead of getting pages, you know, 1 through 20, 20 pages, we get, you know, page 1, 3, 5, you know, 7, 9, etc. And quite often it's really pertinent information that's missing. So make sure that you've organized any electronic documents accordingly. And if they require a label, that you label them accordingly. So, you know, 2025 W-2, XYZ Corporation, 2025 1098, mortgage interest. If you have the ability to label them, then you can certainly do that. Also avoid highlighting or writing notes directly on official forms. Instead, include a separate summary sheet or digital note for context. Because if you're writing on those documents, sometimes it could obscure numbers or it could be read wrong. So please don't, you know, doctor those up. And to protect your sensitive personal information, do not email tax documents to your preparer. Instead, upload them to your preparer's secure client portal. So if you're doing it electronically, you do it to a client portal, make sure it's secure. And if you're delivering it paper, make sure you're, you know, delivering it to the proper location, the proper person, you know, confidential, et cetera, et cetera. But do not email. We tell clients, do not email anything with a social security number on it. Even though many, many social security numbers now are obscured, there still could be enough information that some, you know, nefarious activity may be, you know, taken with it. So just still always be careful. Another important items to note for your tax preparer would be major life changes, such as marriage, divorce, new dependents, home purchase or sale, job changes, including new side hustles or gig work, cryptocurrency transactions, or other complex investments. So sometimes people might think, oh, I'm going to get into cryptocurrency. And, you know, most people don't even understand, well, a lot of people don't understand it. And you may not even have realized that you, you know, entered into certain transactions that are now reportable on your tax return. Cryptocurrency is not cash. We don't have to report our cash transactions when we go to the grocery store and give them, you know, $100 for our groceries. But if you give them $100 of cryptocurrency, that's a reportable transaction. So you really have to be careful, because every taxpayer now has to check a box whether they have entered into cryptocurrency exchange. So be careful of that, meaning like selling. A final tip from our tax corner was a little preparation now goes a long way. Before submitting your tax documents, take a moment to open, review, and organize everything. Remember, if you're providing paper documents, no staples, clear labels, secure uploads, and to these steps ensure a faster, more accurate filing process and gives you peace of mind and more time to focus on your financial goals. And you know, personally, from my standpoint, it makes the tax preparation faster. And if you're paying someone to prepare your tax return based on time, then it makes it, you know, more affordable for you as well. Because tax preparation isn't cheap anymore. I mean, there is a lot of burden on the tax preparer now, more and more. There's a lot of rules and laws that tax preparers have to pay attention to. And huge penalties if they don't. So, and there's fewer and fewer accountants, by the way. I encourage anybody who's interested in accounting to go into accounting. It's been a great career for me. So if you're wondering if it would be a good career for you, I'd be happy to talk to you. But there's really a shortage, and we're seeing it getting worse and worse. And one might think, oh, well, you know, we're going to have AI. And frankly, I've been thinking the IRS should roll out what I thought they were going to try to do a couple of years ago, which is, if they already had all the tax information for you, why do you have to file a tax return? Meaning, if someone has Social Security and 1099 INT interest, the IRS already has your tax documents. They already know what you have. And if there's no other changes to it, why do you have to file a tax return? I've never understood it. I would understand if you had to make changes to it, or you had some transactions that aren't reported on tax documents. But let me tell you, if you file a tax return and you forget to report one of your tax documents, they know what tax document you didn't report. So yes, things might get more efficient, but you know, frankly, there, from my perspective as an advisor, there's still a lot of tax planning opportunities for clients that if you're not aware of what those opportunities are, you may miss out on using, you know, some tax benefits that would otherwise be available to you if you took a little time and you know, thought it all through. It's hard enough to understand tax code. It's even harder to understand it when it's constantly changing. You know, simple things like with the new tax law in 2025, where there's this extra senior deduction. I've heard people come in and say, oh, Social Security is no longer taxable. Well, that's not true. It first of all, for a lot of people, Social Security isn't taxable. My mother doesn't pay tax on her Social Security. So for a lot of people, Social Security already is not taxable. Social Security gets taxable based on other income on your tax return. So the more income on your return, the more your Social Security could get included. It's never included as taxable income more than 85%. But imagine, I can have someone who has zero taxable Social Security or up to 85% included in their income as taxable Social Security. Do you think we got some playroom there maybe? We may. We may have some playroom depending on the tax planning. So even though we could be using artificial intelligence or, you know, new software programs or new, you know, filing options with the IRS, it doesn't mean they're doing the tax planning for you. So if we're in front of some of these decisions, in front of reviewing our tax situation, there may be leverage or opportunities for tax planning there. It just came up at a meeting the other day that, you know, people think, well, long-term capital gains tax rates are lower than ordinary income tax rates. And I always say, not all income is created equal. So qualified dividends qualify for a lower tax rate. Long-term capital gains qualify for a lower tax rate. And there's even different rates. I've heard people, you know, like when people want to complain about taxes, they say, oh, it's 20% on capital gains. Well, it's only 20% on capital gains if you're like in the top tax bracket. Like, you know, you're making several hundred thousands dollars. So for most people, it might be 15% for long-term capital gains or for qualified dividends. But for some people, it's zero. So just like the Social Security can be included in taxable income, either not at all or up to 85%, we can have capital gains tax anywhere from 0 to 15 to 20, and with potentially an extra 3.8% net investment income tax. That all comes into play with tax planning. Now, granted, if you're loaded, you're rich, there may not be a lot of tax planning we could do. No, I'm sure we could. But, you know, sometimes your income is what your income is, you know. But I always tell people, if there's opportunities for tax planning, why not? Why not do them? All right, some other reminders from our tax corner. For IRA owners who died after December 31st, 2019, most non-spouse designated beneficiaries are subject to the 10-year rule, meaning the entire inherited IRA must be fully distributed by December 31st of the 10th year following the year of the owner's death. That sounds a little complicated, but basically, if you were someone who inherited an IRA and you were not a spouse, so you were the son, the daughter, the aunt, the uncle, the brother, the sister, a friend, you inherited an IRA from someone who died after December 31st of 2019, there's a 10-year rule on that. Now, it doesn't stop there. Remember, nothing simple. Does not stop there. Lots of other caveats here. The key distinctions based on the original owner's status at death. If the original IRA owner died on or after their required beginning date, so their required distribution date, if they died after that, then the beneficiary must take annual required minimum distributions each year during the 10-year period, calculated using the single life expectancy table based on that beneficiary's age. In addition to depleting fully the IRA account by the end of year 10. So if you're someone who's, you know, grandma died, she was 80 years old, she was taking RMDs. Now you're 55, you inherited grandma's, you'd be younger. Let's see, 80, 60, 40. You're 40, you inherited grandma's IRA. She was taking required minimum distributions. Now you have a required minimum distribution for that 10-year period. Now, I will say there was a transition period. There were a few years where the IRS didn't know what they were doing, and you didn't have to do it. You did have to do it. You didn't have to do it. You did have to do it. So there were a few years where you didn't have to do it, but you still have to have it out by the 10th year, even though you didn't have to maybe take it those first few years. So you've got to look and see how much you should be taking. There's a minimum amount, but you may want to watch because you might not want to wait till the 10th year when it's a huge distribution. So there's some other caveats around that. And when we come back, I'll talk about the rest of those. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. And what's really, really easy, folks, if you have questions, we do have a website, yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm always happy to answer questions through there, and I don't bug you either. Yourfinancialchoices.com if you're interested in sending in questions that way. And I could always use them without, you know, on future radio shows to help other listeners. And I try to never, ever disclose anything too personal or identifiable. All right. Let's go back to these IRAs. This is really important. So if you inherited an IRA from someone who died after December 31st, 2019, so basically, you know, 1-1-2020 or soon, you know, since, there's new required minimum distribution rules for those non-spouse beneficiaries. I already went over what it is. If the decedent was in required minimum distribution phase, you have to take it out within 10 years and you have to take an annual minimum required distribution. If the owner who died died before the required minimum minimum distribution date, then there are no annual required minimum distributions for that non-spouse beneficiary, but they still have to take it out within the 10-year period. All right? Now, what else do we have that does not have a required minimum distribution? Roth. So if you inherit a Roth IRA, the decedent did not have a required minimum distribution date because there is no required minimum distribution date for Roth IRAs, then you as the beneficiary do not have a required minimum distribution either requirement, but you still have to take it out within 10 years. But the beauty of the Roth is that can grow income tax-free for 10 years. So unless you need the money, you can just let that puppy grow. Now, the IRA, what my big fear there is if you inherit grandma's IRA and grandma's IRA is, you know, $250,000 and you let it grow for 10 years and you only take out your little minimum amount at age 40, your minimum amount is some tiny little thing. Well, by year 10, you're going to have a huge IRA distribution. So you really got to map that out and think that through and be careful with big inherited IRAs for non-spouse beneficiaries. Again, the IRS provided transition relief for that through 2024. There's no penalties for, you know, leaving it in there. But going forward, there will be penalties. So starting with 2025 distributions, which was last year, and ongoing in 2026 and beyond, failure to take a required annual required minimum distribution will trigger an excise tax penalty. Any missed RMDs must be reported on IRS Form 5329, and a waiver request showing reasonable cause and steps taken to remedy can be submitted. So there are circumstances where the IRS will waive that penalty. You didn't realize it. You messed up. You thought, you know, you know, grandma died in 2019. She died in 2020. You didn't know what rules applied. You might be able to make your case and they could waive the penalties. You know, as soon as if I've ever found it in the past, because, you know, this has always been around. If you failed to take your required minimum distribution, the IRS has always been pretty good about it. If you find it timely and, you know, rectify it. For example, I had a client once who moved an IRA from one custodian to another custodian, and the old custodian, you know, might have ordinarily done the required minimum distribution, let's say at the end of the year. It was an inherited IRA. And then when the money moved, it was assumed maybe that it was already done. I don't recall what the exact circumstances were, but we just said to the IRS, hey, you know, they changed custodians and that's how this got missed. And can you, you know, waive the penalty? And they did. So you want to make sure if you are the beneficiary of an inherited IRA that you review what was the decedent's date of death, were they taking a required minimum distribution or not, and did you take yours if you were required to do so? If it was missed, rectify it right away. Don't panic. Be scared. You know, just take care of it. Just fix it. All right. So those are some things to watch out for. I do have some time to talk about some additional information for accessing some of your tax information online. So for individuals, businesses, you can set up an online account with the IRS. I don't have all the steps to do that, but if you go into irs.gov, I'm sure they provide those. But I did want to mention that you can check for your refund status there, and you can check for tax records, payments, notifications. They have a link. I use this for clients all the time. Where's my refund? You can go in and check for the refund status. So as we get further into tax season, if you filed your tax return, let's say February 8th, and you were expecting a refund by, you know, usually they process them quite quickly, you know, 2 weeks or so. And let's say we're at March 5th and you think, well, where's my refund? You can go online and check. And you can do that by entering your Social Security number, your filing status, and the refund amount. And you don't have to sign in at all. Anybody can do that. As long as you have the Social Security number, the filing status, and the refund amount, you can check where it is. And it'll say either the check was mailed, or it'll show like a little, you know, colored bar saying, you know, in process. Sometimes it'll say, you know, requires further review. So you can get a status on your refund if you're waiting for one. Now, but if you have an IRS account, you would just sign in to your IRS account, check your refund. You can check for tax records and any number of other items. So how does the IRS help? Again, irs.gov. They have lots of great information, publications. Boy, when I was young and new in tax preparation, I used to love my publication 17. There was another, I think, a publication 559 or 529 about estates. They had some of the great publications. You could get a package. We called it the Package X, where you had books of all the forms. You could perforated paper, rip them out, photocopy them. When we used to have to handwrite them. But those forms are all available online now. Publications are all available online, and they're, you know, have a lot of information in there if you like to, teach yourself or educate yourself. So if you do have an IRS account, you can access tax records and transcripts. You can make a payment. You can explore free filing options. And I'll probably talk about that more next week, too. I'd like to remind people of that every year, about their options with, you know, either self-preparing by hand, you can do, which the IRS prefers not for anybody to file paper returns, you know, filling it in with a pen and paper, but you still can. And you can also do it through software that you buy online usually now. It used to be you'd go buy, you know, the package at the office supply store, and now you can go online to the website and download the software. You may use a tax preparer, and you may use a free tax service that some organizations in your community may provide through volunteer services. And typically the one I usually mention is AARP. They train volunteers to come in and help at various locations in communities to help with tax preparation. And that would be an option as well. I'll talk more about that next week. But on the IRS website, again, if you have an account there, you can get the tax records, transcripts. A transcript gives detail of what tax reporting documents have been reported to the IRS. So, for example, sometimes we'll have clients who, you know, they procrastinate, they're scared, they don't want to do it, they get overwhelmed by it, they forget to file their tax return or don't file their tax return or don't want to file their tax return, and then they want to come clean. So we want to do the tax return. They say, well, I don't have any tax documents. I threw them away. I couldn't look at them. I don't know what happened to them. They got chewed up by my dog. I got divorced and the spouse, you know, threw away everything. Whatever it might be. The IRS has a transcript of the tax reporting that's been done in your Social Security number and your name. And you can get that information. You can request it from the IRS. We have had to do that from time to time. And it's great. It tells you what the income is. It tells you what the tax document is. It tells you if there were tax withholdings. It tells you what payments have been made. It's great. If you didn't file a return and you had a refund, the IRS isn't necessarily going to come after you. But if after 3 years you still have not filed, they're not going to give you your refund either. If you owe, they will probably come after you, because remember, I told you earlier in the show that they have all that tax information, and if they think you're going to owe, they're going to send you a letter saying you owe, and that you're going to owe for penalties for either late payment, late filing, whatever it might be, penalties and interest. If you have a refund, they may not come after you, okay? So this is why it's really critical for those people who are afraid to file or don't file, who actually might have a refund, be entitled to a refund. You may be entitled to other kinds of credits that you might not have realized, that maybe you didn't even owe tax, but you still could get a credit, maybe an earned income tax credit. Maybe you have foreign tax credit. Maybe you had a child who was in school, and there's a refundable portion of education credit or a refundable portion of whatever other credit there might be. So you could be losing out on things that you may be entitled to. But if you have an online account with the IRS, you can get those transcripts. You may have been a victim of fraud, and you might want to sign up for a personal identification number. We call that a PIN. And the IRS gives you a new number every year. I think you have to apply for it new every year. But if you use the wrong one, then we're not going to be able to electronically file your tax return. So you want to make sure you have that available and you protect it, because we cannot file as tax preparers, or you yourself, if you're self-preparing. If you have a PIN, you're not going to be able to file electronically unless you have that PIN. Okay, it'll get like rejected. Make sure you check that you've entered all the numbers properly if you're self-preparing. Another IRS benefit is if you are setting up a business or a trust or an estate, you can file for an employer identification number free. I just breaks my heart when people tell me, oh yeah, I hired a service. They did it for $250. You should never have to pay to get an employer identification number. That would be important for, business filings or entity filings. So just like we have social security numbers, if you have a business, if you have a partnership, an S-corp, estate or trust, you may need an EIN. I say may because there are certain trusts that you may set up that might be a living trust, a revocable trust, and in that circumstance, you can use your social security number. You don't need an EIN for what we call revocable trust or grantor-type trust. All right? Check amended return status. So there's lots of, in fact, that was something fairly new, the amended return status. That's kind of nice. You can make payments online now as well, and you can pay from your bank account. There's also, I think, availability for debit cards or credit cards, but there's processing fees that apply. So if you've got the money in the bank, just, do it through your bank or write a check. The IRS is trying to get away from checks. I think they are still accepting them, but the preferable payment option would be to pay online. And you can pay online either through your tax preparation, where you enter your banking and routing, account number and routing number, or you can go separately and set up a payment option directly on the IRS's website. They have pay now or schedule payments up to a year in advance, and you can do direct pay with your bank account. There might be some additional information that you have to give them for that, and I'll have to talk about more. I'll include that next week when I talk more about understanding your tax return, because I'm running out of time. So lots of information to hopefully help you make it a smooth process. I never want anybody to get anxious about tax season or get anxious about tax filing. It's all okay. We can do it, and we try to make it easier for you. If you have questions, remember, you can always send those through yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm happy to help. That's my frustrated wannabe teacher, and want to help people get through tax season okay. I want to thank Bob and Cindy for being here. Thank you, Norm. Thank you, listeners. Next week, understanding your tax return. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.